us again. He spoke for the Commonwealth Club about 3 years ago. It was a sellout crowd. It was a wonderful, wonderful presentation. And Dr. Sampson is a retired physician. He graduated from UC Berkeley and UC San Francisco School of Medicine. He practiced medicine, hematology, and oncology for 30 years and then headed the oncology division of Santa Clara Valley Medical Center from 1991 to 1995. He taught the course Holistic Medicine and CAM at Stanford School of Medicine from 1977 to 2008, and he actually created and edited a great medical journal called the Scientific Review of Alternative Medicine. I've read many issues. It's a marvelous, marvelous journal. So please welcome Dr. Wally Sampson.
Thank you, Patrick. And in return, I'm honored to be here and to be able to present some material for you that's sort of been on my brain for about 35 years and slowly stewing in the crucible of my skull. Anyway, I started out getting interested in this material from a pretty straight physician standpoint, wondering why some of my patients left and went to Tijuana, for instance, to get Laetril. And I spent the first 5 years of this investigating that particular substance, which got me interested again in chemistry, which was my major in college, and which I ignored and let lie fallow for 30 years or so until I got interested in this stuff. And I got interested in the actual physiology and the biochemistry of these methods, not just Laetril, but others as well, including acupuncture, homeopathy, and so forth. Over the years, developed along with a crew of other physicians and scientists, we developed methods for investigating these things, how to go through your head if you're interested in using that part of the brain, which is intellectual and logical, trying to reach conclusions about why something would work and why something would not work, or if it doesn't work, why doesn't it work? And if it really doesn't work, and you find out why do people continue using it? Those are interesting questions. I'm going to concentrate on the last part to explain why not just from a personal point of view of why people do what people feel they have to do, but how these substances and methods and actual medical systems, separate systems from the scientific system, gain popularity over the years and have independent structures of their own. That's I learned through the Laetril movement, that it became actually a complete system of its own based on its own vision of chemistry and of physiology. But I'm going to be more broad about this and try to include a lot more and concentrate on the general principles of why we have the needs that we do for behaving the way we do, and we don't always behave strictly rationally. I know I don't, so I don't expect that you would either. And looking at this from the now sort of a trite extraterrestrial alien comes to the Earth and observes human society and says, what's going on down there? There are a lot more fascinating and mysterious things going on in the world today than just interest in alternative medicine, I'll tell you that. But this happens to be my interest, and I'm trying to take a look at it from that point of view. Say someone comes and wonders, you know, what's really going on here? There seems to be a conflict between science and standard medicine and the alternative medicine or integrative medicine movement. How come? What's going on? Why the big conflict here? the Spock would say. I present to you my own theory, which is that it's, first of all, a recent invention. It's a confection. It's a human synthesis of something that didn't exist 40 years ago. A number of different remedies which had either been discarded by scientific medicine or out of which scientific medicine grew, became popular, and instead of these individual systems having their own proponents, advocates, believers, partakers, practitioners, became a social and political movement of its own, including all of them. So it's a recent invention. My perception of what CAM, I should put that in quotation marks every time, but that gets a little tiresome and insulting after a while if you interpret them as scare quotes. But CAM is a language invention of recent years, past three or four decades. I define it as a loosely connected array of traditional and cultural methods and substances of unproven efficacy, advocated for improving quality of life and satisfying personal or cultural expectations, sometimes promoted falsely for curing or prolonging life. That includes just about all of them, I think. It gives credit where it's due and a little accusation where that's due. I see it as that the reasons can be divided. You know, in any kind of a science, if you start out in botany or zoology, the first thing people do is classify. So these things have been classified before, and the National Center for Alternative Complementary Alternative Medicine has its own classification. I think one of our local theoreticians has another classification. Mine is that they're factors that are both personal and sociocultural that are at work. And there are also factors that are contemporary as well as perennial. Well, the perennial ones have existed for centuries and millennia. Contemporary ones have depended on the contemporary politics and economics of the time. And there are certain themes or leitmotifs that keep cropping up. I wrote an article early in the history of our journal called The Braid of this Alternative Medicine Movement. And I had just the picture of a braid, which is different threads entwining, reappearing, disappearing, appearing in a different, in a sort of a different form after a long time of, lying fallow or being inactive. Conceive of it as sort of visualizing an ongoing braid that started in prehistory and continues on. Prior to 1970, most of these methods were considered anomalous, mostly ineffective or falsely promoted. Some of them that are still included in alternative medicine were intentionally and fraudulently promoted, not all, of course, but some. And prior to 1970, the concepts of holistic, alternative, complementary, CM, and integrative did not exist. That may come as a surprise to some of you, but I see there are a number of you with hair as gray as mine. That shouldn't be a surprise if you think back on it. There was no such thing before 1970. So something had to have happened around that time. And those things that happened were pretty much having to do with the cultural changes that went on in European and American, North American society. So I've already mentioned there are perennial historical and human factors, current factors, personal beliefs, cultural systems that have been set down over, again, centuries to millennia. And recent developments such as propaganda and now known as language capture. I'll spend a little time on language because language capture itself is a term, a euphemism, because propaganda has sort of a bad connotation, doesn't it? Ever since Nazi Germany, where the term became common and commonly known. But propaganda actually antedates Nazi Germany and Herr Goebbels and dates back to an American invention, which was one of those of a fellow named Edward Bernays, whose psychology and psychiatry disciples or students in the audience will recognize as one of Sigmund Freud's nephews. And he was a double nephew, as a matter of fact, because one of his aunts or uncles married another aunt or uncle from the other side. So anyway, Edward Bernays actually invented the social concept of swaying public opinion through the use of language. And so it's essentially an American invention. Of course, it antedates that, I think, propaganda originally. The word derives from Catholic use of propagation of the faith, dating back many centuries, perhaps to medieval times. So I've put in here, in quotation marks, pop medicine to distinguish the types of medicine that most physicians don't do, popular medicine. And that's it's a recent variation on really an old set of circumstances. There are cults and new movements that have affected the propagation of this new confection or invention. And behind it all, a lot of funding and political forcing. People have taken political sides on these issues and have become slogans for both the left and the right side of the political spectrum in Europe and North America. And another influence has been that of evidence-based medicine, and I'll touch on that. You may wonder why that would have perhaps accelerated the interest in alternative medicine, but it did, because evidence-based medicine brought up the principle that there are new ways of proving whether something works or not, and most of these methods had never been submitted to those. In other words, the randomized clinical trial and the meta-analysis and systematic reviews of those trials. That's all based on evidence-based medicine, which gave all of these methods a new life. Perennial factors, ones that you'll recognize from old sociology courses and so forth, and just looking at oneself and one's children and relatives and anyone else whose behavior you want to explain. Mistrusting authority, transferring of authority from the standard to a new authority, such as in the case of transferring from standard medicine to Linus Pauling, for instance, and it became another authority in a different line. And a whole series of methods of what we call magical thinking, we call from an outside observer, would be principles such as systematic correspondence and the law of similars. And that is illustrated by some very old principles that are dominant in Greek medicine as well as traditional Chinese and Ayurvedic medicine. In other words, something that looks or tastes or resembles a disorder or a quality becomes a treatment for that quality. You can just look at what comes to mind when you think of the word red. Red, blood, sanguine, Mars, get the point on that. And phlegmatic, another one of the four humors, which is slow and thick, and that comes from phlegm, and two forms of bile, bitter and black or depressive, described personalities largely, but also in Greek medicine and through the Middle Ages and up to the Renaissance, were descriptive, matter of fact, up until the 20th century, through the 19th century, used by standard medicine to describe disorders. I don't know what happened there. I'm sorry, I didn't pick up on this misprint here, but folk wisdom and customs, of course, play a role. Many of these methods are inherited, you might say, from one generation to another. the principle of vitalism or life force, that nature has a force behind it. When you think about that, I mean, that's behind music, art, and the way we think about things, the way we look at nature. The principles of animism, anthropomorphism, and spirituality, spirit possession, attributing human qualities to animals, animal qualities to inanimate objects, explaining thunder, lightning, storms in terms of gods and other anthropomorphic symbols. We and our ancestors who preceded us only by a couple of generations, because we're much more intelligent now, aren't we? But used all of these. You can pick up books and from the 19th century and read these kinds of symbolisms that go on. And the Romantic period was full of this kind of reference to qualities. It's almost defined the era of Romanticism in art and music and medicine. The principle of suggestibility. We're all suggestible. Any magician, any hypnotist will easily explain. And some of us become more leaders, and some of us are more comfortable as followers. And this explains the development of eventually of cults, but also of groups, all sorts of groups, support groups, and other forms where humans gather and think and talk and act. So the point here is that the perennial factors are partly those of the human condition, human psychology, and the way that humans behave and have been behaving since recorded history that we know of, and obviously before that as well. So there's nothing new about these things, but they're operating right here and now and in the CAM system. More contemporary factors include the 1960s. Who could leave it out, you know? Free speech movement at Berkeley. I was out of Berkeley by that time, but recall it well. The Vietnam War, the problems of the Vietnam War, Watergate, all were generators of mistrust of authority and looking for some other explanation and way of behavior. The New Age, New Ageism, with extrasensory perception, mind power, and a new rise in the validity of spirituality. I shouldn't say validity, but the popularity of spirituality. I was asked to write an article for the AMA Journal once by the students on spirituality. And so the first thing I did was look it up in the dictionary, and spirituality said two or three dictionaries referring to matters of the spirit. So I looked up spirit, and it said referring to matters of spirituality. So I sent that back to the student. The paper was not accepted. They wanted something else. But I don't know. You know, it's sort of like pornography. You know, you can't define it, but you know it when you see it, or you know it when you feel it. That's what spirituality is. It's part of everybody's experienced it. You experience anyone who's gone to a religious ceremony has experienced it. But it's awfully hard to describe. But it had a resurgence in alternative medicine, obviously. And evidence-based medicine, again, I put that in here because of what I said before. It sort of gave a new life to some of these methods because we couldn't say they didn't work. Medicine took a lesson from physics. And, of course, physics has had its own dichotomy, if any of you know about this. There are the theoreticians and the mathematicians, the Einsteins of the world. And then there are the experimenters, the Oppenheimers, who have to put this stuff to the test, and Berkeley and the cyclotron and so forth. experimenters always win because they're the only ones who can prove whether something a particle exists or not and what it does, no matter what the theory says. In the case of, interesting case of quantum mechanics, where the theoreticians were right and the experimenters had to go a long, long way to prove it. At any rate, what medicine did was take on that model of the physicist and the chemist and apply it to medical science. And you'd have to prove physiology doesn't count in evidence-based medicine. It specifically states that on page 37 of their text. They get it up there real early. You don't rely on just pharmacology or what you know about a drug or what you know about the physiology of an organ, how to operate on it, what to do about it. And then illustrations of the false roads that medicine has taken are legion. I mean, doing gastrectomies to remove the acid part of the stomach, freezing the stomach to get rid of the acid-secreting cells, all sorts of things that are done based on physiology because we knew that there was hyperacidity with ulcers. That's just one. Digitalis for heart failure. It was thought to have had a lot more effect than it really does. So it's been replaced almost completely by newer drugs. So it's physiology and the pharmacology are not the last word. It has to be proved. Unfortunately, the control trial has defects of its own, so nobody's been able to do a perfect trial. And I think if you think about that for a while, that's another lecture, but we'll come back to it maybe if I have time. Now, another one, there are two other issues here. There was another one in here. I don't know where it is. Cultural relativism, there it is. Cultural relativism is very important in the development of popularity and the persistence of CAM. I don't quite which comes first. You can call it PC, political correctness, or you can call it politeness, or you can call it social justice, or you can call it all sorts of things. But a new respect arose in the 60s, 70s, and 80s for the value of cultures other than Euro-American culture. I think you all know what that means. A new respect for other cultures, for Chinese culture, for Indonesian culture, for American Indian culture, for African culture. Yeah. And some of this got carried away a little bit in that the idea developed among academicians, actually, in their books and papers, lining many, many shelves containing this information about the equality of different systems. Well, it depends what the criteria for evaluation are. If you're looking for something that will work scientifically, the systems don't measure up. If you're looking for something that provides a cohesive system for social stability, economic stability, many of the other systems work quite well. It depends on what your definition is, doesn't it? So this whole concept of cultural relativism arose, got a bit, I think, misapplied when it came to science, because there's only one science, and now all cultures, all nations use it. There's no such thing as a Western science anymore. It's just plain science, because all science is using your head intellectually to figure things out and ways of experimenting to prove it. That's all it is. Then along came postmodernism, which complicated things a little further during the 1970s, mainly through literary criticism in France, but picked up quite quickly and is still taught and dominates the thinking of liberal arts in colleges and universities in North America. And these are just some of the principles of postmodernism. There's a lot to quibble about here. Some people say one or more of these shouldn't be in there. Many others say it's one thing or another. But elements of these, I think, are present in most of the concept of what postmodernism is. Modernism was really a devotion to structuralism, it's called, or objectivism, and essentially use of scientific method, value-free facts. Deconstruction comes along and sort of leapfrogs over science in the pyramid of things with, let's say, mathematics and then physics, chemistry, the biological science, and the social sciences in that order, and then the literary arts at the bottom. That's a hierarchy or pecking order of the scientific pyramid. along come the sociologists and social anthropologists and leapfrog to the top and say mathematics and science is a social construction, usually developed by European white males, just to throw in the cultural relativism thing. And so the social scientists then became the analyzers of physics and other sciences. And it sometimes got carried to some ridiculous lengths, I think, but it also includes the fact, the ideas that knowledge is relative, yeah, true to some extent, but science equaled a social structure, and that equaled political hegemony. And I've taken courses in this and read fairly widely, and I can tell you that that's the way people think. Maybe some of you think that here. At any rate, that in turn, and the fact that, or the idea that language recreates or redefines reality. That is a little odd, but that's also a French literary criticism idea, and it actually works out, as you'll see, because language capture and propaganda have actually changed minds to such a degree that large societies and nations perceive reality as different. And that's why CAM ceases to be something that is other than real, is because the language used describes it as real, and we are subjects of our language. And this leads to politicization, as I'll point out later, but I'm going to accelerate here a little bit because I don't want to leave too much to the end and leave it out. But an interesting political event has occurred. To the outside, naive historian Spock, coming from another planet and looking at this thing, he's seeing two political poles, a right wing and a left wing. And they agree on complementary alternative medicine. They argue about everything else, but they also argue about which one of these CAM methods may be better than the other. But there's a coalition. And from the left side, it has to do with anti-authority and equalization, the postmodernist way of looking at things, social relativism, cultural relativism, and the relativity of truth. And from the right side, you've got a non-regulation, do away with the Food and Drug Administration, free economy, no regulation from above, let every person decide for oneself how to lead one's life. So you can see that we've got a little bit of an unusual, to say the least, situation over CAM, but that has led to its popularity. There is not a particularly polar economic or political opposition because lots of people want it. I was going to use the corollary, why do bald men wear hats? Well, because they have to, and they want to. And that's what the answer here is. Sorry to make it that overly simple, but personal experience, which always trumps the intellect, incidentally. Evolution of the terms. Here's the way it's gone. Remember, this is a talk on the evolution of the CAM system. Before 1970, if you look up references in Medline, PubMed, or any other reference book you want to, you won't find much on holistic medicine. There's practically nothing before 1970. And it enjoyed that particular concept, body, mind, spirit, enjoyed a popularity during the 70s. In 1980, a couple of papers came up which described holistic medicine as an alternative to standard straight in sensitive scientific medicine. So that became popular. Sometime during the 1990s, usually originally in Britain, the word complementary came up because they didn't like the word alternative. They wanted something that would fit in with standard medicine rather than being in opposition all the time, which was a battle that many of them felt they could not win. So that came in, and then they combined it as complementary alternative, or CAM. The first reference to integrative medicine, which is the latest incarnation or word definition, first I ever found was 1997. Some references, if you look up in Google Scholar or some of those, you won't find much before 2000. But I did find one, and I think Andrew Weil, the University of Arizona, actually invented the term. It is now the preferred term for CAM. So these terms were actually written about and invented by one person or another. I don't know that any one person ever claimed to originate any of these, except for holistic, which was Jan Christian Smuts in 1927, former Prime Minister of South Africa, who first defined the word holistic, but not to medicine. Holistic medicine was 1970. And here, if you look up on PubMed, as you can do this when you get home if you want to, just look at the number of titles that there are in which holistic medicine appears. From 1950 to 2010, 10,600 references. Alternative starts around 1976, 4,800. And integrative begins around 1996, that I found anyway, or 2000, only 1,500. It gives you some idea of the time sequence and the chronology of how this came about. I put in here crisis in medicine. An interesting thing, someone kept describing the crisis in medicine for which we have to have a new laws, just upsetting everything, and it's upsets doctors and so forth, and has created quite a bit of division in medicine. The term crisis in medicine goes back, I could find, to 1957. I find that I think it's more of a political tool than a reality. The fact that it's too expensive, no doubt about that. But a crisis, I don't know how you have a 50-year crisis that remains unresolved. So I don't buy that there's really a crisis in medicine. I just threw that in there, hoping to sway some minds. All right, evolution of terms. In 1993, the National Library of Medicine, which actually controls language usage because when you look things up, they determine what the terms are. They changed chiropractic from cults, where it was, to alternative medicine, and acupuncture from quackery to alternative medicine. So a simple operation in the National Library of Medicine helped to redefine and legitimize the entire movement. Am I making sense to some of you skeptics out there on why this thing is? It's been a natural evolution. And incidentally, there's no conspiracy here. This has been one development after another. And people, smart people, recognize that there's an opportunity here and will help to manipulate or move and write, talk, and so forth. And the thing gets a life of its own, purely because of the way we are, the way we're built personally, and the way cultures move. There are some important meetings which help to propel the whole movement. In 1988, sponsored by the Fetzer Foundation of Detroit, Mr. Fetzer owned the Detroit Tigers and half of downtown Detroit. And he liked the idea of mind affecting health. And so he actually sponsored the original Office of Technology Assessment, Congressional Office investigation. It took 2 years on unorthodox cancer treatment. And I put this in here because they spent a whole day debating what term they should use to describe what they were trying to do, which to describe all these methods and which ones were worthy and which ones not. It took them a whole day to come up with unorthodox because they discarded many of the other terms. In 1997, the Office of Alternative Medicine had a two-day conference on the definition of alternative medicine, which is it's a little different from the one I gave you at the beginning, but along the similar lines. But essentially, they put in a statement there that they said it expands the world view of medicine. In other words, takes in spiritual and non-scientific aspects. And that was the main upshot of that two-day meeting. Then there was the White House Commission on CAM in the United States. That took a year or two to do. They had conferences in all major cities, many major cities, including San Francisco. And in 2004, the Institute of Medicine was sponsored by the Bravewell Foundation the first Institute of Medicine study was sponsored by the NCCAM, National Center for Complementary Alternative Medicine. It cost $1 million, and they did the study. It's available under the NCCAM. You can look it up and read the whole thing if you want. It's a couple hundred pages. Then 2009, just last year, the Bravewell Collaborative sponsored the Institute of Medicine study on integrative medicine. I won't go too much into that. The reason I'm putting these in here is that there have been studies sponsored by both Congress and the administration in the government side and by private people who have access to their various fortunes and want to sponsor these large conferences, which help propel and give legitimacy to the entire movement. These meetings have been widely described in the press and on the internet too. I think I'll wind up with giving you just these three kinds of models that I think are followed. They have to do with the different types of alternative medicine that there are. There's a folkway system, which is inherited culturally, the neo system, and a product model, an individual product, individual substance, product, which is marketed. And these three systems work slightly differently. The folk systems include herbs, natural products, and so forth, given for their folkway reasons, such as purple cornflower for snake bite, things like that, from American Indian medicine, but are marketed for either the same reason or for other reasons. A chiropractic has now become, it is both an invention and now a folk system, an American folk system. It's 100 years old, 110. And homeopathy, 200 years. Naturopathy, which began as an American 19th century eclectic type of medicine, which included lots of natural types of therapies, which included proponents like Kellogg and Graham and people who were proposing vegetarian diets and things like that. That's over 100 years. Acupuncture, 2000 to 50 years, made a few changes along the way. We're not really sure if it's 2000 in its present form, probably not. It's probably more in its present form and present use, probably much more recent, having to do with the Cultural Revolution in China 50 years ago, 40 years ago. And Ayurvedic as well. The commonality here is that they're all very old and they don't change. The science of medicine changes. Folkway medicine usually does not. A few of the words may change, a few of the applications may change, but they're not a change otherwise. You sort of receive a packaged system, and practitioners develop, they have meetings, they have their private professional schools, where they educate one another. They grant their own degrees. Finally, it's picked up by the popular press, books, favorable books. Then they lobby for legalization and licensure, and then define their ways into professional schools. By that, I mean standard medicine and nursing, dentistry, and so forth. And that's the evolution of how a folk system gets incorporated and actually taught in medical schools. The Neo system starts with someone who gets a revelation, such as D.D. Palmer, who felt that he cured his custodian's deafness with neck manipulation, and around it developed an ideology, which he called chiropractic. He adopted some materials from Still and others of osteopathy. And then they educated themselves, granted their own degrees, developed books, meetings, press picked it up, popularized it, and the next thing you know, the lobbies occurred for legalization and licensure. And here's a list of a number of these that have occurred in addition to chiropractic. Homeopathy, naturopathy, anthroposophical medicine, a lot of body works, and there's a lot of certification for a lot of these. And then there's the individual substance. Remember, there are three. There's Folkway, the Neo system, or invented system, and also the supplement model. And a substance, any non-essential or natural substance can be marketed, can be named, marketed, and stated. You just state what it does in the how it's used. For instance, any herb can just be marketed these days, depending on which of the 19 uses, for instance, of echinacea, American Indians used it for, but someone selected it for colds because you have a lot more colds than our snake bites, so echinacea is marketed for colds. I mean, it's a little cynical, but the market people are operating on you all the time. You don't know it. It's behind the scenes, and they use all sorts of language to make you think that that's what really went on. Actually, echinacea was used for 19 different, if you look it up, if you get an original American Indian book, medicine book, look it up, 19 different uses. As a matter of fact, colds aren't in there. There are problems of translation, perhaps to different languages, to French or Spanish first and then to English from the original Indian languages. It's very difficult to tell what these things were used for, traditional use. In Chinese, the same way. Or select an essential substance, such as a vitamin or mineral that people really need, and just fatty has two T's in it. Change the dose or formulation and market it as a necessary compound for something that it isn't needed for, really. Again, it's popularized through books, meetings, ads in the press. So you're getting the idea here. This naive historian, sociologist, comes in the form of a Spock and takes a look at what's going on and sees that there are a number of primitive methods that had their own schools, their own methods, and so forth. Along comes science, which suddenly prolongs the lifespans from an average of 20 or 40 years to 84, and gets all the credit. What happened with all these others? Well, they have to find a role somewhere because they satisfy needs. Bald men wear hats. And a lot of people need to have something more in times of stress than just an IV bottle hanging there. And complementary alternative medicines often supply that need. But it also supplies another need outside of that of illness, which is that of health. And it's awfully dry just to say to eat a fat-free diet or a low-fat diet of 30 grams a day and food pyramids, which bore the hell out of you, all that sort of thing. This is what standard health medicine has to offer. And then you have to work at it. You have to learn how to cook a certain way and so on and so forth. Whereas CAM practitioners or marketers with particular diets or that are more fun to eat can come along and satisfy the need and promise more health. So you can have a little competition, but we're all subject to advertising and we're all subject to being sort of diverted a little bit into areas that give us more self-satisfaction, and that usually is pretty much the whole story. I have a few more small points I could throw in, but I think I've given you enough of an idea to tell you that most of these things do not work. Most of us have looked into it, biochemists and physiologists and so forth, nutritionists, in great detail, and have found that, and even in clinical trials, none has turned out to be a true positive. It's been now 20 to 40 years. There are thousands of trials, hundreds of those on chiropractic, even acupuncture and others. And when you submit people to tight controls and rule out suggestion and rule out all sorts of extraneous effects that might be coming in to alter someone's perception of whether something works or not. And if you control those very tightly, if you find out that there's less and less effect to no effect. So I hope I've given the scientists a little bit of a tweak by telling them that maybe they don't have all the answers to every human need, and I hope I've given some people who might be believers in a certain alternative medicine or not a little better insight about what's really going on inside people's heads and in society, and take a few steps back and take a more objective look. Wouldn't hurt. Bald men need hats. Thank you. Yeah, questions, yes.
Can you comment briefly on how some religious concepts going from faith healing to intercessory prayer fits into the CAA picture?
Faith healing, of course, has its own history. I try to avoid introducing religion into any talk. I don't want to make any more enemies than I already have. I think you know the answer. It's another. I covered it under spirituality, actually, which is the euphemism or the way out of having to describe a particular religion or biblical quotation or something like that, where that was either inaccurate or wrong or fantasy, what have you, or it could have another explanation, but. I don't know what it is about spirituality. I couldn't write that paper, and I still can't define it. I know when I've gone to some services and heard a good speaker, something within me stirs, and I guess that's what it is. I don't know. It's not a thrill going up my leg, but it's something else. It's part of everybody's condition, I think, except for the most removed or schizophrenic among us. That's about all I can say. Yes. How would I define or differentiate holistic from integrative? I don't know that there's a real difference. I think the originators of the word holistic had integrative in mind. That's what I think. I mean, I've never been asked the question. I haven't asked myself the question, so I have to think about it a minute. I think they did feel. I think the alternative and the complementary, especially people who invented that term, had the same thing in mind, which is to incorporate other aspects of human need into a medicine. As a matter of fact, that's what the Bravewell Collaborative is up to. And I didn't talk about how much money is going in to propel some of these things as well. Bravewell, I don't know. They're a mystery to me about how much money they have. But the main proponent is the wife of the fellow who runs Morgan Stanley, which is one of the few investment banks left standing in 1998. It's a great fortune. It's hundreds of billions of dollars they have. And Christy Mack has invested it must be hundreds of millions, into medical school departments. 44 or 48 now, maybe, medical schools have departments that that Bravewell funds. And that would have to include a professorship, at least, and a several training traineeships. You know, that's a lot of money. And I'm sure she's put in well over $100 million from Bravewell alone. The others, including Osher from San Francisco, $10 million each to UCSF and Harvard. Samueli, who owns broadband, you use it every day. Samueli is a graduate of UCLA, and he and his wife have funded to the tune of $5 or $10 or more million of dollars to UC Irvine for a department. These are all integrative departments who are working to try to find a role for some of these methods, including acupuncture and things like that, into pain control and so forth. I think holistic concentrated more on the heady part, you know, spiritual, mind kind of a thing, and didn't have any specifics in mind. And if there is a difference, I would think integrative is more specific and wants to integrate specific methods. That would be my guess. I'm not catching every word. Can you speak up a little bit? Yes. I still didn't catch the entire. Evidence-based medicine came later and
influenced.
Yeah. Yeah, evidence-based medicine is only about 18 years old now, maybe 20, 1993. Yeah, well, there's a problem here. That's a different, it's a different lecture. Evidence-based medicine is defined as bringing the best knowledgeable and quality of medicine to bear on an individual's particular problem. So it's the physician is supposed to evaluate what's in the medical literature and bring what that physician thinks is would best be applied to a particular person's specific problem. Of course, every person's different. Every disease is slightly different in every person. So that's what it's about. Nevertheless, there is a basic or there is a base of knowledge based in proofs of clinical trials, whether something works or not. And it's up to the physician to, it's mostly physician-directed, that term of evidence-based, to interpret it and to bring that information to the best of one's ability to the patient. As I mentioned before, the problem is that every clinical trial is slightly different from any other. It takes 6 months to 4 years or 5 years to run a trial. It takes another year to analyze it and interpret it. By the time it gets in literature, the information may be 8 to 10 years old. Yes.
Prayer are useful in helping people to heal quickly. Ornish has proven that by making dietary and lifestyle changes, can enhance longevity. So it seems to me that complementary and alternative medicine hardly has a shot at even being able to, that complementary and alternative medicine has used the randomized controlled trial model and has proved to be effective, yet there's all this money being thrown at pharmaceuticals that are sometimes not proven effective. And I'm also wondering how we can get the, how you can eliminate all biases and personal perceptions and interconnectivity and all that stuff from a randomized controlled trial as it is.
Do you know how complex that question was? But let me give you a couple of stupid answers. I mean, I've got to simplify things. You become Spock, and you come down here and take a look around. And if you're wise, you'll take a lesson from the Watergate and say, follow the money. Now, where is the money going? The money is going to something that works and that can make a profit. That doesn't make it bad. It doesn't make it bad. The problem with complementary alternative medicine is not everything you said was exactly on the mark, partly true, but most of them, including acupuncture, works so well because it's so hard to get a control group. There are 20 physiological reasons, psychological reasons, why acupuncture can appear to work. None of them has to do with acupuncture. It all has to do with counter-irritation, distraction, suggestion, conditioning, conditioned reflex, all sorts of behavioral things, a mindset that going into it, the condition of the treater. They all combine, become a system to give the perception that something's really happening. Nothing is happening. I can guarantee you. I don't want to put a money bet on it, but I wouldn't want to take your money. It works because it appears to work. So far as substances are concerned, which other ones? I don't know. What is that?
Vitamin D.
It works. Vitamin D does lots of stuff. Vitamin C does lots of stuff, but not what they said it did. It does not work for colds and does not work for cancer. If you're that external observer coming down and you look at vitamin C for colds and you see 5 controlled studies in the medical literature showing no effect and one that shows it shortened the course by a half a day, what would you as an alien observer say about all these people taking all this vitamin C? These were done independently in multiple countries, Canada, U.S., Europe, all over. Medicine is not American now. It's an international community. Go to any meeting, even here in the United States, in something called the American Society of this and that, and half of the attendees are from Europe and Latin America, Japan, China, Australia, everywhere. And people go all over the world to exchange ideas. It all works the same, and it's called scientific medicine. And it's based not on absolute truth, but on the probability of truth, the probability that something works. The likelihood that vitamin C works for cancer or colds is on the order of, I would say, 1 in 1,000 at this point.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Sampson. It was an excellent...
Thank you.